with the shorts. Now the break might be on for Patrick Schick, and look what he's trying to do. Schick, oh! Wow. Can you believe wow. what we've just seen? Out of this world from Patrick Schick. How many players would have the presence of mind in the heat of tournament battle to try that?
I think we've just seen goal of the tournament, Derek. We have just seen the goal of Euro 2020.
What a goal. What a call as well. Derek Ray on the call for that one earlier today. He's putting in a shift today, let me tell you. On the panel with us today, alongside Don Hutchison and Stevie Nicol, I'm Kay Murray. And yes, I am surrounded by Scotsmen, so I do not want to shick the knife in. It would be shickening if I were to do that, guys.
Stop it.
We will move on to talk Scotland a little later on. But we must start with the game that we've just seen. It was Spain against Sweden, and it finished goalless. Let's bring you some of the highlights from this one. We'll take the action here early on in the 16th minute, and there were questions in the lineup, as you would expect with this Spain side.
Big chance for Dani Olmo. Great ball in, and he's got to do better than that. Kay's what, 6 yards out? You've got to try and find one of the corners there.
Yeah, header saved there. Anyway, later on, 38th minute, it's a mistake at the back. Alvaro Morata putting it wide.
And questions about Morata, whether he is the right man for this Spanish attack. And one of those days, they pass the ball around a lot, but nothing in front of goal.
Nope. And then we'll take it to the other end of the pitch, and it's Alexander Isak. He's been making waves in La Liga all season. Doesn't manage to get his footing right here and put this one away.
It's classic Sweden, soaking up pressure, then trying to get something on the break. At the end of the day, is it going in? I don't think so. In the end, they're a little fortunate. It comes back off the post.
And then he sets up his teammate, Marcus Berg. Here we go. Ball coming across to him. Misses a tap-in.
Got to score, I think, unless there's a little deflection from the defender. You can't quite see it in real time. Great work from Isak. I think he has to score there, Berg.
It jumps up on him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Gets a bad bounce.
Now, there was a lot of calls as to whether Gerard Moreno should have been on the pitch sooner. Anyway, Sarabia sends the cross in. Gerard Moreno with the chance here. It's saved, Olsen, by Sweden once again.
Yeah, they had the chances towards the end of the game. It was one-way traffic, and we saw plenty of Sarabia trying to be the creator. But Sweden, a very tight defence, holding firm.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sarabia. Well, very late on in this one, a chance fell to him, but he wasn't able to put this away, and so goalless it finished.
Got to play with more urgency, Spain. It was almost like they had a 10-minute spell at the end of the game where they committed bodies forward and they showed more urgency. The rest of the game was passive, loads of passes completed, but towards the end of the game, when it really mattered, when they were desperate for the goal, they seemed to try more and throw more bodies forward.
Look at those numbers, yeah. Derek. Possession 84%, passes completed 830 to Sweden's 89.
It's absolutely astonishing. I was looking at that earlier, and of course with Spain, it's the short passing game, it's not ambitious all the time, and it was a bit predictable, I think, in this match. I think that would be fair criticism, and Sweden had the capacity to be awkward opponents. They were.
Oh, well, we now can welcome in Luis Garcia, delighted to be joined by him, and Frank Leboeuf as well. Luis, we will start with you. What were your thoughts on the match then? And do you think that Luis Enrique got his lineup right?
Well, now that the game ended, of course, we can have a thought, and maybe here, maybe there, we could use a different player. But at the end, in the beginning of the game, probably was the not having Gerard Moreno up front. It was something that concerns me, because I think he's the best player of the top. Player that could give us goals. He showed it during the whole season, and not having him there, it was a concern for everybody. And well, we've seen it during the whole game. Yeah, we know that we can be dominant during the game, we can have the possession, we can create, but we are not clinical. We don't do well up front. We miss those clear chances. Morata have a couple of them, Dani Olmo as well. Ferran Torres has been a little bit missed up front. Fantastic, maybe 25 minutes in the first half, but I think that in the second half we were a little bit flat and we couldn't find a way to try to get into the last third. And well, that last pass is something that this Spanish team missed.
And what do you think he's been thinking there though, Luis? Because Gerard Moreno, as you mentioned, he's been standout for Villarreal all season. I think he's got more goals this season than the front three put together. Why hasn't he banked on him?
I can't believe he's blanking you, Keir.
I know, he's ignoring me.
Listen, I find this a little strange, you know, that anybody can question what team Luis Enrique's put out today. They absolutely bossed the game. They had more than enough chances and they didn't take them. Mm. It's pretty simple. If you were to give this to Luis Enrique before the game, he would have taken it and so would all the Spanish fans. Now, whether you play Morata or Moreno, would it have made any difference? Because they both had chances that they should have put back in the back of the net and didn't. So, does it matter?
But then, obviously, Moreno came on a lot later and Spanish fans had wanted to see him sooner.
But he still had a sitter. Listen, you have to score there. Not hit it straight at the goalkeeper. If you're that good, that ball has to be in the back of the net, as should have happened with Morata. So, nobody can complain. They both had chances. They both missed.
Luis, with Gerard Moreno, just saying that I think he has more goals for Villarreal this season than the front three put together. Why didn't he bank on him?
Well, I guess that Luis Enrique, I thought in the beginning that I think everybody was expecting Gerard Moreno to play on the right side where Ferran Torres was playing. I think he can bring something different to the team. The diagonal, he smelled the goals every single time that he's on the box. He proved it in the last 10 minutes that he's been on the game. That he's a real killer. It's true that for this game, I think Luis Enrique was trying to use two very dynamic players with Ferran Torres and Dani Olmo. Dani Olmo has been fantastic. Good diagonals, trying to use the space that Morata was leaving at the back, behind the centre-backs. And at the end, it's about trying to be clinical, and we didn't do today what it was has to be done. I think Morata, two chances in front of the goal are key for open a little bit because we knew Sweden will be at the back waiting for the chance to make it do a quick counter-attack with Alexander Isak at front. And at the end, if you score that first goal in the first maybe 20 minutes, the change straight away changes. It's open a little bit more and then you can start using the spaces on the flanks like we try for many minutes. But yeah, it's true that it happens before and probably we are going to see it again. He's going to play against Slovakia, he's going to play against Poland, and two teams that they're going to try to sit at the back because they know that Spain has got a lot of problems in the build-up.
Frank, like Luis and Stevie were saying, you can have all that possession, but at this level and in these tournaments, if you don't take your chances, you'll get punished.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I didn't expect anything from Sweden, but I expected very much more from Spain, and very disappointed because I think Spain and Luis Enrique are 10 years in the past, you know, where tiki-taka was very interesting. But I don't care. I don't find that astonished, as Derek said, to see 830 passes where maybe 400 passes were completely useless. And the football has changed. It's more direct now. We go back to something in let's say, mixed between what we saw before, much before 20 years ago, and what we saw 10 years ago. It's more direct, like we saw Liverpool playing, like we see Chelsea playing, and we also see Manchester City. But for the Spanish team, I think it's I see with less quality, much less quality, the international team that we saw 10, 15 years ago when they were very successful. But they don't have the players for that anymore, and it's not the football that you want to see anymore. And they have to change that. They have to evolve in the modern time and see what they have to change about that because they have to be more direct. And I'm disappointed I didn't see Moreno because Moreno offered more possibility to play more vertical. But well, we have to give credit to Olsen, the Swedish goalkeeper, because he made some good saves as well.
Frank, Don is talking about those strikers that maybe Spain from years gone by, and you think of David Villa and you think of Fernando Torres, and then you're looking at Alvaro Morata, and you worry if he's got that killer instinct that's needed.
I don't think he has. I think he's a very good player, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he's elite level. I don't think he's got that mentality. But I saw the game exactly the way Frank did. When you're watching Spain, it's almost like Frank said, it's like you're watching the tiki-taka and you're watching Spain of 10 years ago when it was brand new and they were, you know, they were so good at keeping the ball and they had a certain amount of possession where, you know, close to 1,000 passes where they just pass you to death and then all of a sudden they'd start creating chances. But the game's moved on now. And I've seen it the same as Frank. When you come against a Spanish side now who are quite slow and predictable in their passing style, Sweden just said, well, OK, we'll bank in, we'll play 4-4-2. Got to get past us. You can have as much possession as you want because they weren't hurting Spain. And then it's funny how the last 5 minutes of the game, that's when all the chances come for Spain, when they were a little bit desperate and they got the ball forward and they got the ball wide and they got crosses in the box. So I think Luis Enrique has to try and take this Spanish side on. Me and Derek were looking at the lineup before the game and we worked out the average age for Spain is 25. So they are in transition. They've still got players with a little bit of experience. I'll use that loosely because there's not too many caps, but very experienced players in the clubs that they play for. But I think I want to see a little bit more speed from them.
Yeah, and with Sweden as well, you know they're always going to be difficult to play against any Sweden side. But they too did have their chances, Derek, and didn't manage to put the ball away either.
Yeah, and Marcus Berg is probably going to be having nightmares about it. Now, you could say that the ball bobbled a little bit, but when you're a striker in an international tournament, you're thinking, OK, against a team like Spain, I might not have many chances, but if they come my way, then I've got to put them away. As I say, it's not a sitter because, you know, as you look at it more and more, you think, OK, it maybe did just pop up slightly and he was under pressure. But, you know, it could have been even worse for Spain when you look at it this way.
Going into the next game then, Luis, what do you think Luis Enrique will be looking at? Do you think there are going to be changes given what he's seen in this match?
Yeah, I expect changes. I expect players like Thiago in the second half to be in the 11 starter. I expect Gerard Moreno to start also because it's true that Luis Enrique is going to try to go until the last game playing the same way, trying to have this possession, to be dominant during the game. I agree totally with the guys that it's true that they need to speed up a little bit more, a little bit the game to try to bring the ball from one side to the other a little bit quicker to don't allow the team to get at the back. But it's true that he's going to go forward with this situation and maybe we'll see if he continues with Morata or he's going to maybe try to make a change and use another player because it's true that Morata, when he's confident, can score any single goal in the most beautiful goals. But if with this amount of surrounding noise that is hearing from the Spanish press, from the supporters, it's not in the best position to have that confidence. And maybe it's time to give him a little bit of space, a little bit of time, and maybe use him in the third game.
Luis, great to hear from you. And as Luis mentions, the Spanish press, they definitely do not let anybody go under the radar when it comes to big, high-profile misses like this. And Morata can expect to see his name over the papers like Marca and AS tomorrow. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Poland and Slovakia, let's get you the action in this one. Then we take it to the 18th minute. It's Robert Mack making room, takes a strike. Ball bounces off the keeper and it's Chesney with an own goal.
Yeah, it goes down as an own goal, but terrific wing play by Robert Mack. Deserves all the credit in the world for that.
46th minute, Karol Ranecki gets a foot on it. Goal for Poland, 1-1, Stevie.
I've seen this a thousand times. I still don't understand how the goalkeeper doesn't save that.
It's the scruffiest finish you'll ever
see.
62nd minute, though, and this changed a lot in this game. It's Krakowiak, already with one yellow card. He commits a foul, gets sent off.
Not for me.
No.
Not for me.
No.
You know, you get sent off. That is very soft. I mean, he's just accidentally stood on the opposition's players' laces, and they can be painful.
It was for Mark Klottenberg, though. I think he did say, definitely a red.
In UEFA competition, probably.
Not for the referee, that's a shot.
What a finish, by the way, from Skriniar.
Milan Skriniar, one touch and finishes.
Brilliant finish. Sorts his feet really well.
And so that is Slovakia off to a strong start there. And we'll take a look at the match stats in this one. Obviously, everyone talking about Robert Lewandowski before this game in the spotlight with 41 Bundesliga goals this season. When you look at these stats and you look at the results in this game, what were your thoughts? What would you take away from it, Dom?
I would take away that Poland need to be a lot better. They need to create more chances for Lewandowski. The best number nine, I think, in world football, but he hardly got any service. He had one or two touches, but not where you want him in the 18-yard box. Even aerially, they didn't put crosses in the box. And now, all of a sudden, from nowhere, Poland have got work to do.
Stevie?
You've got to think that the next two games, they will not be up against a team that are going to sit at the top of the box and have 10 men behind the ball. Well, 11, if you include the goalkeeper. So, you know, they don't have any superstar in the middle of the park that's going to conjure something up to get the ball to Lewandowski. So they need more space. And they'll probably get it in the next couple of games. Unfortunately, doesn't do them any good in this game.
Absolutely not. So, the red card, these two not having it, but you think otherwise, Derek?
Well, all I'm saying is I've gone to briefings held by referee officials at the start of seasons, and in UEFA competition, I think Mark Clattenburg, of course, would know this better than anyone. When you step on a player, no matter if you've had a yellow card or not, technically it's a bookable offence, and you've got to go. I know that players will have a different
view. Derek, I always stand by. Not every foul has to be a card.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So I think nowadays the referees are under more pressure to adhere to instructions that are given to them before the tournament. And had he not given him the early bath for that, for a second
yellow? I think a lot of people would have been fine. I think the refs have done really well. They've set the benchmark quite high. They've been excellent.
Agreed.
So it's two against one here in the studio. I wonder what Frank Leboeuf thinks. How did you see the red card situation, Frank?
Well, that's insane for me. He doesn't deserve a red card. For me, it's always the same problem. As long as the referee don't understand football and never played football at a certain level, they will never get and they will never feel when it's a dirty stamp and when it's a mistake and when it's a clumsiness. And that's definitely a clumsiness. So it doesn't deserve a yellow card. I could see every time I was watching a game, I say, well, the guy did it on purpose or he doesn't do it on purpose. And definitely, he doesn't do it on purpose. So why do you want to give him a yellow card? You can give a foul, for sure.
And a free kick. And that's the thing. We want referees to understand what's going on in the game. And referee situations, the way the game's being played. And he clearly has no idea, in my opinion, initially, that if he gives a yellow card for that, then this guy's going to leave the field. Because if he does, then he shouldn't be a referee. Because you just get somebody in the sideline to just blow the whistle and give fouls. You know, referees are there to referee the game as it's being played. If you want to make this a more physical game, then you won't give fouls or yellow cards to situations. And this is one of those situations where it's clearly just a mistake. There's no intent in it whatsoever. And you should take a second and go, right, if I send this guy off, this is going to make a huge impact on the game. And what am I sending him off for? Am I sending him off the field because he's punched somebody in the mouth? Oh, no, I'm sending him off because he stood on somebody's toe. How ridiculous is that?
And you were saying the impact that it had on the game. Obviously, they'd got back into it after half-time. It made it 1-1. How much of an impact do you think that had? How much do you think it hurt them?
Absolutely huge, because psychologically, you go down to 10, it's hard work, it's hard graft. And as Stevie said, you know, you talk about playing against Slovakia. I mean, they might surprise a lot of people in the tournament, not because they're stylish, not because they're going to go and play open football, because they are real hard workers. They've got a good manager with a good system. They've got brilliant defenders like Milan Skriniar.
Who could do this?
Exactly. He's not really known for it, but he's certainly known for being one of the best centre-backs in world football. So you come up against the side, you go down to 10 men, your job's ridiculously hard.
We'll take in the Group E standings then. After what we've seen there, Slovakia coming out 2-1 winners on top of Poland and top in the group right now. Who would have known?
Who would have known? Who would have thought? But you know what, Kay? I thought a very effective performance by Slovakia. And Poland, to me, in this game, looked a bit lost. And they've been looking lost under Paulo Sousa in a few of these games, scratching around, trying to find a formation. It was sort of 3-3-3-1. Lewandowski on his own, no help. Doesn't help that Milik is not in the tournament. And I think a deserved win for Slovakia.
OK, guys, deserved win?
Yeah, and the next game against Spain. I mean, you know, the pressure's massively on Poland now because they can't get beaten that game. And then asking them to try and beat Spain is going to be an awful hard ask. So how they manage that scenario is going to be difficult.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I have to manage this scenario gently now because we're getting the first highlights of the day. A panel full of Scotsmen, as you may see. Scotland taking on the Czech Republic in Glasgow. First meeting between the two teams in a major international tournament. Fans in the stands as well, Derek. Take us through this.
Yeah, well, Tofal with a splendid ball. And how about that for a header from Patrick Schick at a time when you wouldn't have said the Czech Republic were on top. But just before halftime, psychologically huge.
Yeah, psychologically huge. And here we take the 58th minute. Laid off to Jack Hendry. Shot goes off the crossbar. So close.
We had our chances. We honestly did. You know, the goalkeeper does extremely well there. You just think Lyndon Dykes is just going to get on the end of that. And it was a point in the game, I'm watching the game, just shy of an hour. And I'm thinking, are we actually going to catch a break? Can we just get a little bit of luck? I think Hendry makes the mistake. He should have played a ball out to the left, to his right-hand side. There's talk of David Marshall being off his line. Wow. Maybe,
well,
maybe
is,
not.
He's too far off his legs.
Patrick Schick said after the game he'd seen a few times that he was off his line.
But look at the goal that he scored. It's incredible. It's goal of the tournament.
It's okay. Beautiful.
Messi, Ronaldo, okay. All these boys score that goal. You talk about this for years.
But if the goalkeeper isn't so far up, then he saves it.
Can't we just give him credit? Can't we give him credit for the goal of the tournament?
Look, let's call a tree, right? If the goal is not so high, that doesn't happen. It happens because the goalkeeper's out of position.
Okay. Well, let's get the thoughts of McGinn after the game.
We can sit here and say we played all right, because we did play all right, and the 2-0 scoreline probably flatters them a wee bit. But they found the quality at the right moments, and we need to find that on Friday. We can either sulk about it or go to Friday with the same attitude and hopefully get a better result.
What did you think about the second one? How did you like it, especially the second one?
Right, the second one was amazing. It was touch of the gut. It was amazing. It was just amazing goal. How he can see the goalkeeper? He was far away. The technique of the kick. It was amazing goal. Amazing goal, and I think we have one of the best goals in the tournament so far.
Patrick Schick says he saw David Marshall being high up in his starting position, and that's something he made a note of. Is that somewhere that David is told to start from, or was he a little too high for that goal?
Well, if he'd been on his line, he would have caught it. If in a normal circumstance he's looking to sweep up behind the defence when it comes out, it's a fantastic finish. I think rather than looking to apportion blame all the time, sometimes you've got to credit the goal scorer.
You definitely have to credit the goal scorer there, Patrick Schick. Now, just in terms of stats, 54 yards is the longest goal at the Men's FIFA World Cup or Euro since 1980. I think that goal will definitely be remembered, even though it was a man by the name of Patrick Schick who's got it. In the studio this morning on this game, Craig Burley and Casey Keller. Here's what they had to say afterwards.
Remember that goal last night from Yarmolenko? We thought, surely we're not going to see a better one today. We saw two very good ones from Patrick Schick, but this, Casey, was something special. However, when we take a better look at it, well, one, Jack Hendry takes a shot on. That's right. I don't think that was the right decision. But now this is just absolutely phenomenal.
Well, you talked about things had to fall into place. It takes this perfect bounce
right
to Patrick Schick's left foot. But this is the really question mark, and I know I'm part of the goalkeeping union.
Because we're looking at this and we're saying, great goal, and it is a great goal. It is, however, you are unhappy with David Marshall's starting position.
I'm just not understanding where he's really helping his team in this position.
Right.
His job is to keep the ball out of the back of the net. If Scotland need David Marshall to be playmaker that high up, I just don't see a reason for it. And you see, yes, it took the deflection. But as a goalkeeper, you're always pessimistic. You're always thinking, what can I do? I think if his starting position is at the top of the 18-yard box,
he gets back.
Schick doesn't even shoot.
Right.
He looks up and sees where the goalkeeper is. Because Marshall was so far out of position.
So where's your starting position?
My starting position is back here. Right. And I'm thinking I can be right here and I can totally be able to support defensively. If a ball comes back, I can still come out and keep possession. But because I'm so high up, And because of the deflection falling perfectly,
because he almost gets there.
He almost gets there. If he's 15 yards further back, I mean, Patrick Schick doesn't even take the shot.
It's, right? It's not the defining goal because it was 2-0 in the end, but that ultimately.
But in the end, it was still.
That ultimately was the goal that killed the game. Yeah. And it's these small decisions at this elite level that make the big difference. He gave Patrick Schick the opportunity and he took it with both hands.
Unbelievably
took it. Absolutely fantastic goal.
A wonderful goal. So obviously a disappointing defeat for Scotland. Will they be disappointed with their performance today, Stevie?
I don't think so. I think, you know, Craig finished there pretty much by saying it's in the small details. I think they'll be disappointed they got the small details wrong because that's why they lost the two goals. But overall, they had chances. The opposition goalkeeper had to make saves, important saves at 0-0 in particular. And so, yes, they shouldn't be too disappointed. And they're in a position where they can't because they're now forced to have a go at England in the next game. So they've got to stay positive, got to think about the things they got right and not the things they got just narrowly wrong.
What did they get right then, Derek? You were on the call for it.
Well, they won more of their challenges than the Czechs did. They had more of the ball than the Czechs. They were in the game. This was a very even game. And it did come down to two moments of quality and both involving a special player who I watch a lot and Don watches a lot in Germany, Patrick Schick, a very talented player, not always delivering for Leverkusen. He's been injured a lot too. But we know what he's capable of. And I do think that luck plays a part in this, and we're all old enough to know that luck has tended not to follow Scotland around at international tournaments. Younger people don't know this because they're just happy Scotland are in a major tournament. They do now. they are wising up to what has been our lives. And so I wouldn't beat up Steve Clarke. I wouldn't be too hard on tactical decisions here and there. It does come down to small details. It also comes down to class, and Schick has that.
Can they get anything from the England game?
Wow. Listen, they've put themselves under it now, haven't they? They really have. I slightly disagree with Derek in a way where it didn't feel like an unlucky story to me, because when you're missing that amount of chances, that's not luck. That's bad centre-forward play. That's not taking your chances. And we talked about Patrick Schick. Mm. Patrick Schick's a guy who's extremely talented, extremely technical, but he has games and he has moments and seasons where you hardly see him. And that was his day today. He scored two unbelievable goals. Sometimes he doesn't even play for his country, for his club, sorry, excuse me. And he had one of them days today where he was just the difference between the two sides. So, as the boy said, when Steve Clarke and the backroom staff analysed that performance, it wasn't one of the worst performances I've ever seen from Scotland. They were in the game for large periods and the goals just absolutely deflate you massively. Now, there's not a lot wrong with the marking. They got quite close to Patrick Schick. He just got an early jump. He was too clever. The header's ridiculously precise into that bottom corner. We talked about the second one, which is wonderful. Brilliant cross in towards him. You know, the header is textbook. It's absolutely brilliant for him. So analyse the game. Jack Henry there needs to have a word with as well. He started the whole thing because he should have played it to his right-hand side. So that's the first problem. David Marshall's off his line. And then Schick scores one of the best goals he'll ever score in his life.
Oh, that will be remembered. Frank, what did you make of this goal?
Well, it's clever. It's classy from Schick. But I would say that really, I don't understand. And I would go with Casey Keller when he explained what the goalkeeper should stand. He can go out. I mean, a goalkeeper has a house. Is the goal, and he has a garden, is a 16-yard box, but we don't want to see him over the line, you know? So he can be a little bit over, like Casey explained, but what the hell he was doing over there? You know, he thinks he's a football player? No, he's a goalkeeper. He's not a football player. So stay in your garden, stay in your house, make sure nobody get the keys, you know, and you're going to be burglared. But I don't really, I don't understand. So yes, of course.
Where do you want him then, Frank?
It's on fantastic
the line.
Form is...
Do you want him standing on the line? Yeah,
no. 16-yard box. You don't go over. We don't need you over there, you know. And I just heard, you know, Casey explaining that. And just an advice to Derek. Mm-hmm. Never beat up Steve Clarke. He's my former teammate. You don't touch to Steve Clarke.
No. I was very clear about that, Frank. I would never beat up a man like Steve Clarke. And we all know how much credibility he has in the game, and we all know that he's your pal.
But you are laughing along with what Frank's saying there, Derek.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that with David Marshall, I mean, yeah, it looks bad from his point of view. But what I will say is we've all seen players try their luck when the goalkeeper is out of position. And most of the time, it's a big wild punt that's nowhere near the goal. I mean, this is high-level technique, isn't it? How many times out of 100 would most players be able to do that?
The whole biomechanics of... First, you've got to see it, so he sees it, Patrick Schick.
Yeah.
Then he's got to get the brain message to his left foot. Then he's got to start on the angle where he started 20 yards wide. I mean, when you see the ball in the air about now, you think that's not coming back. Then, like a golf shot, it's just the perfect draw underneath the crossbar. It's perfection.
So here's the worrying thing, looking at these. We're talking here that it's small details, and those small details are all about defensively, pretty much. And we're saying that Patrick Schick was the difference between these two average sides.
Yep.
Well, I've got some bad news for every Scotsman. England has got three or four Patrick Schicks and more.
I know.
And that is the scary thing. If Scotland try and chase this game, they're in for a bit of a beating.
Stevie, so we've done it
Stevie
before.
Stevie Clark has to be smart. He has to stick to what he has been doing with the Scotland team, which has been, number one, getting results generally, but doing it in a certain way by being solid and not making mistakes defensively and not opening up too early. Because if it goes about it any other way, they'll get their backside scalped.
We spoke about small details. One important detail, Jack Henry with that shot, he's been criticised for taking on the shot.
Yep.
Kieran Tierney would have started that game, of course, had he been fit. Jack Hendry probably wouldn't have. So I know we're talking ifs, buts and maybes, but again, small details relevant to this game.
Frank, you're smiling throughout the whole conversation. Tell us why.
Because I was smiling. Oh, no, I was listening. I mean, I love to hear the Scots, you know, trying to find some explanations to why Scotland lost. But no, it's just
unfortunately, Frank, we've had a lot of practice at coming up with excuses. That's the problem. We know exactly what to say. We've done it often enough.
I know that, and I'm listening carefully in case it happens to friends. But I was listening to the guys, and I know that everybody is going to say that Schick scored an absolutely fantastic goal because the curve is perfect. But again and again, I would say why the goalkeeper is so far away. Because if the goalkeeper is just in the right position, Schick doesn't even try to shoot. And we don't even talk about that goal. It's mostly because of Marshall mistakes than Schick tries that. If he doesn't make that mistake, we don't talk about
it. I hope Lloris gets chipped now.
It's almost impossible to score.
I hope Lloris gets chipped by about 50, 55 yards.
That was the Scottish podcast. Listen, I'm a bit of an honorary Scot. I'm a quarter Scottish.
Yes.
Hence my last name, Murray. Anyway, make sure you check out more of our content over on YouTube. New content available daily. Go over there.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, the group of death. Tomorrow is the day for Group F. Starts with Hungary, Portugal. It is followed with France against Germany in Munich. And that is the big one that we will be talking about next here on ESPN FC. Joining us to do so, we have Archie Rintutt and Julien Laurent is here too. So Archie, before we get into this, we actually saw this magazine, which Derek has explained to me is a bit of a fun magazine in Germany. Tell us more about this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is the front of cult football magazine Elfreunde, which is picturing this Euros as like Star Wars. Not the last Jedi, the last Yogi, as they're calling it, because this is, of course, Joachim Löw's last ride as Germany coach, and a chance for him to try and salvage his legacy, which has been, damaged quite a lot in the last few years, not just with that World Cup embarrassment that they suffered in Russia, but also with the two big results that they've had in the last year, that 6-0 defeat to Spain, and then more recently, that 2-1 defeat at home to North Macedonia. So there is a lot on the line for Joachim Löw. The biggest thing he has to do, though, is get the German public on side, because right now, I don't think they're that interested in Germany.
Is that the case that you'd say as well, Derek?
I think that they're a bit careful, the German public, with regard to this team, because there have been difficult experiences, most recently the thrashing in Spain. And I think there's just a feeling, in fact, Kicker magazine recently did a poll and they asked German fans, where do you think Germany's journey will end? And the consensus was quarterfinals, you know, and it used to always be at least semifinals or final or winning it. And I think there's just not an awful lot of confidence. Strangely, I actually have a bit more confidence in this Germany team than maybe a few other people do. Yes, they're in this hammer group, this group of death, but I still think that Yogi Löw's last tournament is a factor in all of this, and it's going to be interesting to see what team he puts out against
France.
Well,
this is a possible Germany starting 11. You didn't think it was too far off?
No, I don't think it's too far off at all. I think maybe the only question is, will it be that front three? Might there be a place for Timo Werner? I don't think so, though. I would probably go with this team. And Joshua Kimmich is the big talking point because, of course, he prefers to play in the centre, but this is a way of getting him in the side. The right wing-back position has been slightly problematic, and it means you also have Gundogan and Kroos in the team as well. Gosens is an absolute surefire starter based on his form.
Now, what do you think, Archie, of the possible starting 11 for Germany?
So, as Derek states there, the big talking point is Joshua Kimmich. Is it going to be OK that he plays at right wing-back instead of at centre-mid? And the answer is yes, because he said that he'll do such a thing. But also, there's a lot of talk here in Germany about them using a back three and whether that is the right call, whether they can get enough out of this team going forward in that sense. I think that France have not faced many back threes or back fives in the last few years. I think that it may be one way to try and counteract the Griezmann, Mbappe, Benzema frontline that they're very likely to face. But I think that having Kimmich quite close to Matthias Ginter, who, whilst he is a solid enough defender for Borussia Mönchengladbach, we've seen him undone by Karim Benzema in the Champions League, aerially, quite significantly this season. I think that it's important to have someone like Joshua Kimmich protecting him down that right-hand side. And I think that's going to be one of the key points for where this game is won or lost.
Now, you wonder if something that might help Germany is if there is trouble in paradise with the world champions. We're just looking at this friendly between France and Bulgaria. These were the games in the lead-up to Euro 2020 kicking off. Benzema gets injured, Giroud comes on for him and scores those goals. Afterwards, though, it was pretty interesting what he said, and I know we've raised it here on ESPN FC. Giroud said, "I was a little quiet because sometimes I make runs and the balls aren't forthcoming. I'm not saying that I always make the best runs, but I am seeking to offer solutions in the box." Now, I will say that he did add to this that it wasn't a stigmatisation of Mbappe, but that's what the feeling was. Didn't take too much investigative work to realise that. So Kylian Mbappe, asked about those comments, said, "We spoke, we didn't speak for long, perhaps because there was not too many things to say. It's true that I was a bit affected by that, but we're not going to make a big deal out of it. It doesn't bother me, I'm an attacker. I have this feeling 365 times during a match and I will have it more. The feeling when you're not receiving service, it is more that he put it out there publicly. I saw him in the dressing room, I congratulated him for his two goals, he didn't say anything, and then I learned about it in the press. We know each other for a little while now, you know how I am in the dressing room. If I have something to say, I'll say it. I have no problem. It stays in the dressing room. It's not a problem. It's a little quarrel," what he said. "There was nothing nasty about it. He's an attacker. He wants to score goals." Jules, it seems that he's saying quite a lot there to say that there actually isn't a problem here. Is there?
Yeah, no, there's no problem. And there were a bit of tension between them, and we know that. And Kylian, I think, wanted even to come to do a press conference to sort of explain himself and talk about it. And Deschamps thought it was better not to have him the day after this argument. And instead, Paul Pogba came on and said, it's all fine, it's all great in paradise, as you put it in the intro. I think Kylian was not happy. They spoke. This is something that I think will not have an impact on the team spirit in the team, on the atmosphere within the dressing room. And I think there was a bit of frustration from Giroud, and a bit of frustration in return from Kylian Mbappé as well. But it's not further than that. I'm sure the Germans would like to think that maybe this could have an impact on the game and on the team, but I don't think it will.
Frank, would you agree with Jules on this one?
Yes, you know, you have to remember that L'Equipe in 98 said that we were bad, that the coach shouldn't be the coach, that Zidane wasn't the player that he is, and that we will never win the World Cup, and if we did, they will whip themselves in
Frank,
the
public square. But Frank, this isn't L'Equipe. This is Olivier Giroud saying it. This isn't L'Equipe.
Well, that was made up. Well, that's not made up, but that was referred by L'Equipe. Was Giroud had made a communication mistake? That's for sure. But we can understand his frustration. You know, since Benzema came, you know, Giroud doesn't exist, and the guy scored two goals. He just want to say, hey, I'm here, guys. You know, don't forget that I've always been here, and I will be here. So I think he's wanted to say, but it's true that Mbappe have the tendency to try to find solutions, you know, by himself and sometimes forget his teammates. He has to be aware of that. He shouldn't be aware in the public place, maybe in the dressing room, but that's what it is. And he's not often, you know, criticized by his teammates, and he has to learn that sometimes it can happen. And he, as he said, it's not a big story. It is what it is. But everything is going to be okay. I know Didier Deschamps. I know he sorted the problem out very quickly. And we all know that Giroud is going to be on the bench. Mbappe is going to play with, I guess, Benzema and Griezmann. And everything's going to work well as long as they score goals. It would be a problem if, like in 2002, the three fantastic front don't score. That would be a problem. That would be an issue. And some people were on the bench going to start talking. That's what it is. That's what's going to happen. But that's a professional level, and it can happen at some point if they do not have the results.
So, Archie, it sounds like our Frenchmen aren't worried at all here.
Yeah, it does a little bit. It reminds me of that meme where you've got that guy drinking a coffee in the middle of the fire and saying, everything is fine.
<It's> fine.
So,
there's
look,
no fire.
I know
there's
that L'Equipe have also though. Been stoking the fire this week and been really, like, fanning the flames when it comes to this whole Kylian Mbappe and Olivier Giroud, Kylian Mbappe and Antoine Griezmann over the fact that he's saying he's going to take penalties, as he always has. L'Equipe have a history of not really caring if their reporting is going to affect the French national team, I think it's fair to say. And we have seen, in more recent history than in 1998, a very public French implosion back in 2010.
Oh, come on.
Let's see what happens this time around.
Come on. Is that you, Frank? Jules, come on.
No, it was me. But how can you compare this with 2010? How you compare two players, one saying like, oh, sometimes I should get the ball, I don't get it, two players going on strike in 2010? There's no fire. I don't know who was talking about fire. There's no fire. There's just, it was just what? Something that Giroud said they should not have said, should have said it straight to Mbappe. Mbappe was a bit upset. He said, hey, next time, tell it to me, don't go public and say it to the whole media circus. And that was it. There was nothing. They don't even talk about it today.
Why is Mbappe coming out,
Jules, why is Mbappe having a press conference to say that everything's fine, we sorted it out in the dressing room, and I can't believe that Giroud made this public? In public. What a lot of nonsense. Listen, if France beat Germany, then nothing will be said. I'll tell you what. If France get beaten by Germany, you bet your bottom dollar it's going to be about Mbappe and Giroud and upsetting the camp and doing this and doing that. There's clearly a problem. Otherwise, Mbappe is not calling a press conference to say there's nothing wrong.
But he's not. Mbappe didn't call anything to start with. And if they lose tomorrow, it would have nothing to do with the slight incident between Mbappe and Giroud. Nothing to do. Giroud is going to be on the bench. Yeah, he might not even play tomorrow. He might not even come on.
So
if they lose tomorrow and Giroud doesn't play, it's not because they had that little incident via media a week before. It would be a week before. That would have no impact on the game whatsoever.
That would be the first thing they go to. If you lose against Germany, you bet your bottom dollar that'll be in the papers the following morning as one of the problems, if not the biggest one.
Jules, let's talk about the lineup though. You keep mentioning that Giroud won't be in that starting 11. Let's talk through this one. Obviously, we're seeing Benzema and Griezmann recovering from minor problems and likely to be starting here.
Yeah, that's right. Up front with Kylian Mbappe. This is the team that we've known. It will start from a few weeks ago. He played like that in the two friendlies that they had against Wales and Bulgaria. It will be quite fluid up front, so we put Griezmann on the graphic as the number 10 in a diamond midfield. When they have the ball, certainly when they don't have the ball, they go back to a 4-3-3 with Griezmann on one side and Mbappe to defend and Benzema central. But there's a lot of fluidity with that front three. And then the only really question mark is in midfield between Corentin Tolisso, Adrien Rabiot. Rabiot, who was a little bit injured and missed the game against Bulgaria. Tolisso, who did well. Again, between Tolisso and Conte, the advantage you have is that sometimes Tolisso can sit, sometimes Conte can sit. And if one is sitting, the other one can go forward. You can't really do that with Rabiot. So it will depend. I think Deschamps will probably make a call quite late tomorrow. But that's really the only thing. The rest, the other 10 players, we know who they are and who will start.
I tell you what, Don, no wonder Jules and Frank aren't worried when you look at that lineup.
It's not
stacked.
Bad, is it? It's not bad, is it? It's not bad. It's a good side. Just going back to what Stevie was saying and the guys were sort of debating there, I find it a little bit strange because the more they talk about the problem or the not problem, the more there is going to be a problem. And I wondered why, and Jules might correct me if I'm wrong, I think jumping on the back of Stevie when Mbappe sort of called his press conference.
No, so when you
public.
Get sat for a press conference, you know that a journalist is going to ask you that
question. Of course, but where's Didier Deschamps saying to the journalist or Kylian Mbappe, do not talk about this subject. It needs to be buried as quick as possible. So I wonder where it's actually going.
So how does that situation work then in France, Jules?
So Mbappe wanted to come on Thursday last week to talk about it, and Deschamps said, no, you know, let's not do that. It was always planning for him to come on Sunday, which he did, and we knew that he would have questions on PSG and his future and maybe moving, that he would be asked about Giroud, and I think he prepared it. And the line is that he said, yeah, I was a bit upset, a bit affected. That's why he said he used the word affected. But that was it. He also said that it's all forgotten, it's finished, it's over, they're all over it. So I don't know why we're talking about it on Monday, but that's what he said on Sunday. And I really don't think there's a story there. But maybe the boys are right. Maybe Mbappe should not have come on that day to do that presser. They could have easily waited post-Germany game, for example, in between the two games, between the Germany and the Hungary game. I don't know if it's a good timing or not good timing, but I really think we're making a lot of it right now. I think it's really forgotten and there's nothing in there anymore.
The good thing to know, Jules, is that if France lose, these boys will definitely let you forget it, I'm sure. These are the match odds. How do you see this game?
We're still in the tournament anyway.
one observation, Tolisso in the lineup, you know, I think if he qualified for Germany, he wouldn't be near the Germany lineup. So that tells you, you know, it's one angle looking at the two teams. I think Germany are going to win. I think Germany are going to make home advantage at Munich. And I know that goes against the grain in general. Because I think that this is actually a good Germany team. They haven't always shown it. But I think Müller being back, I think Hummels being back, I think very important experienced players in a tournament situation. And wouldn't be surprised if it's a draw, but I'm going to stick my neck out and say Germany.
So you're basically saying this Kylian Mbappe Giroud thing's affected France.
Well, I'll let you guys say
there's
that.
There's a fire.
I think the nice thing and the nice point that you did make was the veterans coming back and obviously making a difference there.
Yep.
Would you agree with Derek?
I wouldn't. I'd go for a narrow French win. I think Germany will sit in for long periods, try and eke their way into the game. I find it strange when I look at Kimmich's position because I think you're wasting his talent for a position where you could have Klostermann who can get up and down that right-hand side. And I think with Joshua Kimmich, he's a Philipp Lahm, you play him anywhere and he'll certainly do the role justice. But I think you either play him right back or you play him in the centre of the park. So I find that one a little bit strange. How are you going to get the best out of Joshua Kimmich in a position where normally they're for straight line runners.
Stevie?
You can't go for Germany.
Well, I just did.
How can you go for Germany?
He's going to look a genius, though, isn't he?
You look at the two teams, you look at the shelf. The French know exactly what they're doing. The French know exactly who's playing, who's not playing. The French probably sitting there, half the bench knows that he might come on if certain positions are happening. Whereas you go to Germany, we don't even know the lineup. We don't even know where one of your best players is playing. How can they be in a better position to win the game than France? I just don't see it. France won the game. It could be close, but I don't see Germany winning.
Archie, could you give any love for Germany here?
I do lean towards France. As much as I myself was trying to fan the flames earlier, I think Stevie's logic there is one that resonates with me as well. The fact that Germany aren't fully together with their automatisms, as they like
to call
it over here.
They are in Munich, Archie. Does that not help?
Yeah, it could. I think a big factor is going to be, how is this crowd in Germany going to respond to the team? What kind of atmosphere will they create? I've seen a quote from a local mayor here today saying that if Germany score, fans should not high-five one another. They should be able to just put their arms up and celebrate. And I think that the problem is, if that's the kind of approach that Germany fans come to this game in, then I would be licking my lips if I was a French player. Germany needs to make this a difficult atmosphere. I don't think they will. And I think that I lean towards, say, a score draw, let's say. I'll sit nicely on the fence that Derek has left.
OK, well, at least there's a draw there. Our two Frenchmen, starting with you then, Frank, how do you see it going?
Well, I was hoping they would never ask me who would win and who I thought would win, you know, because, of course, I would go for France. You know, I would be crazy to say otherwise. But you have to respect Germany. I mean, when I see the lineup, it's a very good team, and everything is possible. And as Archie said, you know, they play at home. Depending on how the fans react, you know, it can be a plus, that's for sure. And we know that this season, we had more win away from home when you had no fans. But when you had fans, we could see the difference. So France would have to do everything like they normally do to win. But Germany would have to really resolve one problem. It's Mbappe. When you play at home, you open up, you play a little bit too far up, and then you have a counterattack. And how you deal with Mbappe. That's the main concern that every team in the world will have against France, and where mostly they didn't resolve. So I will give a 2-1 to France.
OK, Jules, if there's anything I can take from this, it's that you're not worried for France tomorrow.
No, I'm not worried. And no one is worried in France, but we're not too confident, not overconfident. I think France would win. I don't think it'll be easy because I agree with Derek. I think this is a really good Germany team, a better team than people make them out to be. I still think France have too much. And I think that back three, Archie was saying the French don't often face a back three, which is true. But I think this suits us so well because I think Griezmann, Mbappe and Benzema can have a lot of fun in what is still a very shaky defence for the Germans.
And what could make it even more interesting is the fact that because it's the group of death, it's this game before it. Hungary against Portugal. These are the match odds for this one. But this Hungary, you know, Hungary getting into the playoffs and finding themselves in a group with Portugal, France and Germany. I'm not sure if that's a reward or a punishment. Anyway, Tuesday, 5 p.m. Eastern, ESPN FC live reacting to both of those games here on ESPN Plus. Make sure you catch it and all the panel thoughts on all the day's action. The two games then you'll be able to see here on ESPN. Hungary against Portugal, that's at noon Eastern, coverage beginning at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. I'll be on that myself with Tim Howard and Chris Coleman joining me. And then later, it's France against Germany, the big one, 3 p.m. Eastern. Derek, you're going to be on the call for that Portugal game.
I am,
what
yeah.
A team they've got when it comes to experience and youth.
Complete team, complete squad, never lost to Hungary. Doubt it will start this time.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good one. Tuesday, massive day on ESPN. Latest on Christian Eriksen continues to be positive news. This from his agent. Christian does not give up. Him and his family want to send everyone their thanks. We spoke this morning. This was Sunday. He was joking around and in good spirits. He was doing well. Derek, you were on the call for what was one of probably the most difficult moments in your career. All positive signs coming out of this camp now, and great to see.
Yeah, to talk about that experience on Saturday, you know, I've been broadcasting for more than 30 years, and I've never had a harder challenge, and I still feel it now, even a couple of days on. It's all a bit of a blur to me. You know, I obviously experienced what everybody else did at home. The difference was I had to try to put words to it, try to stay calm, and I just said to myself, concentrate fiercely, because we were all thinking about the human side of this. And, you know, Christian Eriksen, of course, is a high-profile footballer, but it didn't have to be a high-profile footballer. It was simply a human being, and we were all feeling this, and, of course, we didn't have the information. And very important, of course, not to speculate when you're in that situation, and to find the right tone. And, yeah, I you know, found it difficult to find the words, and usually I don't have that problem.
No, well, you did just great with that, Derek. Obviously, it feels strange to praise somebody for a situation like that, but obviously you did just find the right tone, and it must have been so difficult for you. But it is all positive news that continues to come from there, and that's the best thing to come out of this.
100%. And we've all been thinking about Christian Eriksen, and we'll continue to do that.
Yes, we absolutely will. OK, more standings for you when it comes to Denmark's group in Group B. We'll take you through those standings. It's Belgium, Finland, Denmark and Russia. Belgium and Finland with wins to start off the group. And you can catch more of those games. It's Finland against Russia on Wednesday. That's 8:30 a.m. Eastern, and Denmark against Belgium on Thursday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern. That's the Group B standings after the first set of games there.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg, letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, the Copa America started on Sunday. It was wins for Brazil and for Colombia. Brazil continue to be flying. Colombia, no James Rodriguez, but managing to defeat Ecuador nonetheless there. Jules will have been keeping his eye on this one. Jules, it's no surprise to see Brazil winning at the moment, is it?
No, especially against this Venezuela team that I think they were going to call Ali Moreno to see if he could play, because obviously COVID has had a lot of impact on the team, on the staff overall, on the whole delegation for Venezuela. So they had it was a B team, probably even a C team, and had Ali Moreno being the country, I'm sure he would have played. But no, more seriously, you can't really judge anything on that game. Brazil were far too good. Neymar was very good, very sharp, like he was against Paraguay when Brazil won for the first time in 35 years, just a few days before the start of the Copa America. So right now, it's all rosy for Brazil at home as well, and a very positive start, even if, again, there's not much you can take away from that game considering the opposition.
Yeah, I understand that. But then obviously you come to World Cup qualifying as well, and you see just how strong Tite's men are. They're perfect in qualifying as well.
Yeah, you're right. And again, I mentioned that Paraguay win, which was huge. I think even psychologically, when you don't win in a country like this, and it's not like if they never played against Paraguay away, you play them so regularly because of the way the qualifiers work, that you've been there a lot and for a long time and you've never won. And yet you go there, you win in a very commanding way as well with Neymar on top. Tite makes a lot of good decisions at the moment, even if that means leaving someone like Firmino on the bench, which was the case against Venezuela. But things are really working. And the leadership is there. Marquinhos scored. Neymar is there. He scores. He's assisting as well. So they have really good momentum going into this very special Copa America, who is now hosting in Brazil. We know the controversy that created. But certainly they started it the right way.
As did Colombia with their win over Ecuador, Jules.
Which is, it's not a Patrick Schick goal, but certainly the Cardona goal for that win for Colombia, who, by the way, were not the best team in that game. I thought Ecuador played really, really well and could feel harshly done by the fact that they lost that game. But if you haven't seen the goal, it's an amazing routine on the free kick that they did, which was just fantastic. And it's good to see goals like this, stuff that you practice the training, that you put together, that you put a lot of time and thinking into. And then when he works in a game like this, it must be an even better feeling if you're Colombia and Cardona with a wonderful workout free kick goal, which was fantastic. And they will have to play better if they want to go further in the competition, as you mentioned, no James Rodriguez, for example. But he was, again, very positive to start the way they did with a win, even if, again, they didn't really play that great.
Yeah, well, the Gavin Jules podcast, talk about everything you need to know in world football. A new one just dropped today, so make sure you download it wherever you do get your podcasts. That is all for now. We thank Derek, Don, we thank Stevie and everybody who joined us, and all of you watching at home as well. Stick around, Extra Time is next. Time for Extra Time. Fake Paul Scholes is in first, says, does a goal like Sheik's chip deflate a team more than a simple five-yard tap-in, or does it feel the same either way, Don?
Great question, because it absolutely does. Because you think, why has a team just scored a goal like that only against us?
Stevie, Ezio says, Stevie said yesterday, you can't win the Euro in the first game, but you can lose it in the first game. Has Scotland lost their Euros?
Have a guess.
Of course.
No?
What, no way back? No way back?
No.
Come on, 16 teams out of 24 make it through. You can't say that, Stevie.
You're not going to qualify with 3 points. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. Probably, right. Yeah.
Scotland are not getting anything from the England game, and that means they've got one game left against Croatia, they won't be favourites to, and even if they do win it, they'll have 3 points.
Did you go into Scotland-England games thinking that way, thinking we're not going to get anything from England?
Of course I didn't. But then we actually had half a decent team.
But this is a decent team as well.
We had a second leg trailing 2-0. We beat them at Wembley. We never went in with that attitude.
I'm not talking as a player here. I'm talking as a wizened old guy that's been seen it
as a miserable
a few
Scotsman.
Times. And I'll tell you what, I don't get paid to be thought we are fanciful. Are we Bravehearts going to come running through Wembley on his horse and jump off and work the ball and get his sword into the top corner?
Will you go now and put all your money on England beating Scotland?
Of course I would.
You wouldn't.
I would, Joe.
You wouldn't.
Let me turn that around the other way. I wouldn't put a penny on us beating England.
All right.
Oh, doom and gloom.
So it's a panel of Scotsmen. Let's get an impartial view.
I don't want them to.
Because, you know, somebody might be overconfident. Stevie, maybe just be double bluffing here. Franklin Buff, no. What do you think? Is Scotland's Euros over?
I'm afraid so. I know that Scotland can maybe draw against England, but I don't think they're going to win against Croatia. So, you know, the pride will talk against England, and we've seen Scotland, you know, giving a hard time to England football-wise. But Croatia, I think Croatia will go back to their best and beat Scotland. So, yeah, I'm afraid so, yeah.
Derek, how does it work in terms of... I hope I'm not throwing you under the bus here, but... Because the third team can actually go through in a group.
Yep.
Is that reliant on your points total?
Points total, goal difference. So, as Stevie said, 3 points might get you through, but it might not.
Right.
So, goal difference would come into that as well.
Did you think it would be a penalty shootout?
No. Joe, I'm trying to do the math on how many points we can actually get. We still got a chance of finishing third?
What percentage chance have we got?
Stop it. Of going through. Stop it.
The funniest is that you thought you were going to be throwing Derek Ray under the bus. He knows everything.
I know, but I didn't want to worry.
Let's see if he remembers what he said yesterday. Because he was asked a question yesterday about the chances of what percent would Scotland's chances against England.
Yeah, let's not go there, eh?
And he said 50-50.
Well, hang on. We are going there because Dan the Orange Man is in and says, Don, what percentage chance do you give Scotland to score their first goal at a major tournament since Craig Burley in their remaining two group stage matches?
Oh, just scoring, so not actually winning, just scoring.
Just scoring.
Just scoring.
Oh, no, I'd be confident.
You'd be confident?
I'd be confident.
What percentage would you give?
I'd go 60.
60%?
I think they would score. I think they'll score.
Right. What percentage?
One's not going to be enough, though.
We're just asking about a goal.
What are we doing?
What's the percentage, Stevie?
What are we doing?
It's two enough.
I'm not scoring two.
So, what's your percentage?
I'll go with Don. 60.
All right. Derek?
70.
Yes. Yay. Yes, Derek.
Derek.
What we like.
Bringing the positivity. Frank from Frank LeBeuf. Frank, is the presence of Giroud the only possible downfall for the French team? Have him and Benzema resolved their spat over the go-kart Formula One argument? Good question.
I didn't get it. Sorry. So I'm reading right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Remember the comments about the Formula One and the go-kart argument between Benzema and Giroud. Is this been resolved?
Yeah. Well, they talked about it, and Benzema confirmed it. He said that they talked about it, and in fact they agreed, and you have nothing to do but agreeing with that. You know, I think Benzema is a Formula One, and Giroud does his best, but he does his best very well. So it's maybe a cliche, but there is no contest that Benzema is a better, let's say, more accurate striker than Giroud is, you know, and can offer more possibilities than Giroud.
Let's pause there. It sounds like once again Frank is saying that everything's fine.
Have they had another argument? Is that another one?
That's one from way back. Yeah.
God, what's wrong with them?
Yeah, so, but they're not worried about it, the French. Maybe this is what makes them tick. I wanted to stick
about that. We'll talk about that after the German game. If we lose, I will find many, many problems. Don't worry. No worries. But so far,
right.
So good, guys.
Well, find me an answer to this one, Frank, because I'd love to ask you. From @FreeBurley says, was there anyone you played with who was average at his club, but who would come alive during international tournaments?
Hmm.
Think Frank can understand me.
Not Frank.
I have to
question.
Think about that. You know, it's been a while. It's been a while, so I have to think about it.
How about Craig Burley? How about Craig Burley? Was he fall in that category, Frank? Be careful of that.
No, well, the thing is, Frank, if you can't think of anybody, it probably is you.
Yeah, look a little bit closer to home.
Well, that was mostly an accident. I wasn't planned in the script, you know. So. I don't know. Maybe Schillaci, you know, in the 90s.
Huh? Good shout.
The guy finished top scorer in the World Cup. We didn't know him before.
And
we lost it after. We lost him after. So good Schillaci, shout. I would say.
Toto Schillaci, yeah.
Good shout.
Good one.
Who's the guy that played up front for Northern Ireland? Who's Northern Ireland's top scorer of all time, I believe, and played in the second.
David Healy.
Yeah.
David Healy. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Couldn't stop scoring for Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Couldn't score a goal in domestic competition. Yeah.
And then there's just those who come alive. Podolski was one. There's those players that come alive during international tournaments.
You do have certain players who, for whatever reason, pull on that national team shirt and they deliver.
Yeah.
Inexplicable, isn't it?
Is there anyone who stands out for you, Don?
No, I can't think.
No, Don just doesn't want to throw anyone under the bus, isn't it?
Well, Burley got sent off, didn't he, in the last tournament, so it can't be him. Can't be Burley, can it?
How about he scored against Norway?
Yeah, exactly. He did. Yeah, he did.
You got to give him that. Yeah. All right, Robert says, what are Derek, Stevie and Don's thoughts on Celtic appointing, and I'll do the accent, Ange Postecoglou as manager?
Well, I think he deserves the chance. I think there has been a bit of a hue and cry among Celtic fans because they haven't heard of him. But he does have a track record and he has a reputation for playing attractive and successful football. So, yeah, it's maybe a slight gamble, but I say, why not? You know, go for somebody who has got this track record, who is going to play football that will be attractive, but he does need support and he really needs a sporting structure at the club that currently isn't there. And so that would be the question mark. But I don't really find fault with the decision to go with somebody who has a track record.
Guys?
Mm. Nice. I'd have to bow to Derek's knowledge. Absolutely. I know my European football, but I've not seen this guy perform.
You don't care about your Australian football?
I've not seen him perform.
Japan as well. He's done well in Japan.
Well, put it this way, I'm a Rangers fan.
Hope he fails.
And I wish they'd got somebody else. that tells you more than...
That sounds like you might be a bit worried there, Stevie.
I wish they got somebody else, and I'm a Rangers fan.
Sounds like you might be a bit worried. OK, Stephen Nagishi says, Derek, do you think Andre Silva will stay with Eintracht Frankfurt for another year, or is he going to be sold this off-season to a Champions League contender? Which big clubs do you think would be a great fit for him?
I think he's going to be sold. 28 goals last season and was fantastic. Many of them headed goals. So I think you would look for a team that plays a somewhat direct style, who can use a striker who's good in the air. But I think, unfortunately, the ship has sailed in terms of André Silva staying with Frankfurt, since they're not in the Champions League. I think he would do well with an English club, but I think he would do well with just about any club. But you'd want him to play rather than being a striker who comes off the bench.
Milan could be a good fit.
Probably would.
Then maybe turn out the first time there. Right. This is a nice question. This is for our players. Usman Khan says, which current players do the boys liken themselves to? Don says he's like Trippier.
No, I didn't say that. I was struggling and I was trying to think of a jack of all trades.
Right.
That's why I said Trippier.
Right.
I was struggling to think of a better one.
Well, try and have a think.
All right, we'll pass it over.
I'll pass it over. Stevie, who would you liken yourself to as a player?
When I was playing left back, I was a bit like Andy Robertson. Getting forward, both sides. We'll go with Andy.
Good little leader.
Yeah, but you could play in the middle of the park as well. You could play anywhere.
Stevie could.
I think in our day, Kate, we had to play anywhere. You know, I've played it right back, I've played it centre back early on, I then was a number four sitting in front of the back four. Then when I captained Everton, I played as a 10. So you had the intelligence to actually just pick up a position and just play it.
Don Hutchison, total footballer.
Yes,
total
like that.
Footballer.
Imagine Frank. Imagine that T-shirt made up.
Who would you liken yourself to?
I don't know. I think I'm an exception, so I don't know if I can be like somebody else. No, I'm kidding. I don't know, really.
Footballing centre half.
I would have loved to see myself in Van Dijk, because I love Van Dijk, but I think I have only half of the quality that Van Dijk has. But he's not in the Euro as well.
So let me put it another way.
I'm really fan of him.
You've mentioned him. Is that who you would have liked to play alongside if you were to play now?
Again, Van Dijk for sure. I would have loved, and I'm sure Steve will back me up, I would have loved to play alongside Sergio Ramos.
But Baresi.
Because I know he loves him.
I was going to go John Stones, Frank. Yeah. Would you be happy with John Stones?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Fantastic player. Yeah. No problem whatsoever. But you know, I played with Steve Clark. I played with Marcel. Played with Marcel Desailly. I played with many, many Jess Hope from Denmark. And you know what? It's how you handle the problem and how you react in half of a second in the duo. And I always found a way to enjoying, you know, the way I play with my teammates. So it's never been a problem. You have to talk, and it's always nice. And players alongside me have always been fantastic. I played with Daniel Van Buyten, the Belgian player who played after for Bayern Munich. Well, the guy was absolutely fantastic. He was starting his career. He was listening to me because I was at the end of my career, and we made something great in Marseille. Everybody remembers just Van Buyten and Leboeuf at the back. So it's how you handle and how you bring something between the two players.
Another player, Derek, that killed Scotland. Do you remember that game?
Remember that game, yeah.
Played in it.
At Hampden, yeah.
Late in the game.
Sorry.
We've gone around the panel now. Have you had a think about who you like?
Stevie, help me. Help me. Who can play?
I think you've got someone in mind.
No, I haven't. I don't know, because I'm not arrogant. I'm not. Derek, come on, help me.
I'm not arrogant. I've got a similar question yesterday. Okay.
I trust Derek.
No, well, they're slightly different styles, but the fact that they're sort of attacking all-rounders, and I hope he likes this analogy or this comparison.
Charlie Chaplin.
No, Thomas Müller. Thomas Müller.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Bit of fun. Got loads of energy. Thomas Müller.
Charlie Chaplin.
That's you. That's you, Charlie Chaplin. Look at him. I like Thomas Müller. Thank you.
I'm glad you do, Tom.
I'm sure you will like Thomas Müller. That's a nice one, isn't it? Are you going to take that then, Thomas Müller?
I'll take that, absolutely.
Peter Sellers.
Got way back
the Pink Panther.
just showing the age of the panel. Right. William Martin says, for Don, would you rather go on as a sub for the last few seconds of a match?
It's a different one.
Oh, eat a cheeseburger.
Oh.
See, last night I said the most embarrassing thing that happens to a footballer.
Yeah, we were all watching.
Yeah, getting put on for 30 seconds, not even touching the ball, and going back off. That's horrendous. But so is hot cheese.
I hate hot cheese. Oh, like
you might be
burger.
In the wrong country for it, you know.
I'd say burger without cheese. It's fine.
What, but you say hot cheese.
Yeah. I can't do it, Kay. I can't
what
do would it. You,
what if the burger had cooled down and then they put a slice of cheese on it?
No, I don't like it. No. Pizza, I'm fine. It's the only thing I can get away with.
But that's hot cheese. That's
no, I know it cheese. Is. I know it is. I don't want it on a burger.
So the burger's a problem.
I'm going on, right? I'm going on as a sub.
You're going on as a sub for the last few seconds.
I'm not touching the ball, yeah.
All right, that was a good question. I'm sure there'll be more
great question.
From that area. But anyway, we thank Frank, we thank Stevie, Don and Derek for being with us and all of you as well. It's been extra time. Make sure to watch ESPN FC, 5 p.m. Eastern. Every single day it will be live on ESPN Plus and you can be joined by the likes of Thomas Muller. Kind of.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.